This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota. With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, stay connected wherever you go and transform your vehicle into a dependable Wi-Fi hotspot. Powering applications like real-time GPS and voice assistant, navigation becomes a breeze. Even on the practice field, AT&T in-car Wi-Fi keeps you connected while in proximity of your vehicle. Work, stream shows, or finish homework without missing a beat. See if you're eligible for a free trial at att.com/in-car Wi-Fi. Don't let connectivity be a roadblock in your journey. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hi, hello, and welcome. This is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, aka the unofficial Euripides fan club. And I am your host, she with absolutely zero chill when it comes to this fine playwright, Liv. Can you tell I really like Euripides? I know. I'm subtle as fuck. He's just so fucking interesting. And frankly, he's also the least serious of the tragedians. And gods, do I identify with that? Like, I know they're all tragedies, but guess what? This one does not end in tragedy. I love him for that. Even the darkest and dreariest and most bloodthirsty of plays can be lighthearted where Euripides is involved. But before we return to exactly that in the final episode of Iphigenia Among the Taurians, another reminder about my New Year Q&A episode. Submit your questions, comments, whatever they may be, by the end of the month at mythsbaby.com/questions. And I realize by the end of the month, I mean more like the 27th. Where we last left two of our three remaining members of the House of Atreus, they were appropriately involved in some drama, resolution of tense sibling reunions, and about to attempt a thrilling escape from a foreign land. Orestes and his friend Pylades landed in the realm of the Taurians in the far east, where they were brought to the priestess of Artemis, who we knew to be Orestes' long-believed dead sister, Iphigenia. We witnessed some absolutely brilliant conversations between the two, where the audience knew well that these were long-lost siblings speaking of their own lives and families, but the siblings themselves spoke in such involved riddles and nonsense that it took some very direct requests to reveal the truth. Where we last left off last week, after Iphigenia agreed to help Pylades escape the Taurians in return for only Orestes being sacrificed, as they were both meant to be, she asked that he bring a letter home to Argos for her brother. And when she finally read the letter and explained who it was for, you know, her brother, who happened to be the stranger standing before her, the siblings were finally reunited in a way that can only be described as Euripides at his best. It was dramatic and emotional and also silly in all the right ways. But it didn't change the fact that Iphigenia was meant to be sacrificing Orestes, and they were all trapped there among these foreign people who are drawn as far more wild and dangerous than their historical counterparts, which means it's now up to the siblings and Pylades to concoct a plan of escape. episode 241. Estranged siblings, a mysterious statue, and a dramatic escape. Euripides' Iphigenia Among the Taurians, part 4. We ended last week and we'll start this week with the same words from the chorus as they witnessed this sibling reveal. Quote, "What god or mortal or miracle will find a way where there is no way and show two long-lost offspring of Atreus their exit from evils?" Even the chorus can't quite believe what they've witnessed. Two siblings who've basically never met each other, since Iphigenia was sacrificed by their father when Orestes was only a baby, reunited through these divinely coincidental occurrences. It's drama and intrigue at the most satisfying of levels, and the chorus is as impressed as the audience. Fortunately, Pylades is there to ensure they don't get too caught up in their emotional reunion. He points out that while it's beautiful, they do need to keep their heads in the game. They are trapped there among the Taurians, and now they have even more pressing reasons to plan for their escape. Quote, "It's the mark of a wise man to accept his luck for what it is, seize the moment, maximize his happiness." Orestes jumps in that he agrees and that they seem to have luck on their side. But Iphigenia isn't quite finished with their reunion. She stops both of them and she tells them that they will not be doing anything else until someone explains the fate of their third sibling, Electra. Quote, "That matters a great deal to me." To which Orestes just replies, quote, "She is happily married to Pylades here." Which again, I just think, like, what a delightful way to reveal such a thing. Maybe it's also the Anne Carson translation. She does like to kind of be that way with her prose, but it is fun all the same. Iphigenia asks about Pylades' background, who his father is, and where he's from, only to learn that he's their cousin, actually, and also Orestes' best friend, and that he wasn't even born when Iphigenia was sacrificed at Aulis by their father. They are so young, these two friends, and Iphigenia has missed so much. Orestes is indebted to Pylades, too, and he makes it very clear to his sister. Not only is he a friend and now husband of Electra, but he is a savior, too. Orestes would not be there without him. Iphigenia then returns to Orestes' crimes, the reason he's there, the reason he was saved by Pylades, the murder of their mother. She asks him why she killed her husband to begin with, but Orestes doesn't want to talk about it. Which is too bad, because gods know she did it to avenge Iphigenia's sacrifice, among Agamemnon's other bullshit crimes. Instead, they speak of Argos itself. Is Orestes meant to be its leader now? She asks. It's Menelaus leading the city, Orestes tells her, and he's been exiled for the killing. But it wasn't because of Menelaus that he was forced out, he tells her. It was the Furies themselves who drove him away. To which Iphigenia says, quote, "I understand. The goddesses haunt you for our mother's sake." She asks him if the fit he had on the shore that she heard about through the messenger was due to the Furies. Oh, yes, he tells her. And it wasn't the first time that they've made him into a spectacle. "Why are you here, though?" Iphigenia asks. "Why come to this strange, far-off land?" "It was Apollo who directed me here," Orestes tells her. "For what reason?" Well, Orestes begins, "Here's how it all started, after our mother's death. Quote, "I was driven into exile with the Furies at my heels, first Delphi, then Athens, where Apollo sent me to render justice to the goddesses whose names we do not name." He goes on to explain that there in Athens, there is a very special and divine court that was created by Zeus explicitly to cleanse Ares of the blood on his hands. Mythologically, this court was sometimes said to be created when Ares killed a man who raped his daughter. It was such a righteous crime that he was tried and acquitted. So famous a trial that it was named for him, the Areopagus, the hill of Ares where the ancient Athenian law courts were located. Courts that were, mythologically, made only the more famous for the trial that Orestes is now recounting to Iphigenia. He tells her that when he arrived there in Athens, no one would take him in, but he was pitied enough to be given some form of shelter. Though he wasn't spoken to by anyone, he was kept apart from them. He says that he played it cool, he didn't make a fuss, quote, and groaning deep in myself that I was a mother killer. One of the things I find most troubling about Orestes' story is how rarely he seems to feel any kind of remorse for killing Clytemnestra, so this reveal feels a little important. He doesn't dwell on it, though. He continues to tell Iphigenia about his time in the Areopagus. He tells her that he went to that hill of Ares, and there he stood trial for his crime. That it was him against the eldest of the Furies, both standing on platforms facing the court. Quote, we each said our piece about my mother's murder, and Phoebus saved me with his testimony. He says that it was Athena who counted the votes, that half of them were for him, and so, quote, I left my own murder trial a victor. He says that some of the Furies agreed, or at least conceded, with the judgment of the court, but that it wasn't all of them. Quote, the Furies who dissented from the law began to drive me in an endless, restless chase. They chased him, Orestes explains, all the way to Apollo's sanctuary, and it was only there, when he laid down before it, that he was given some relief. He was ready to die right there, if Apollo wasn't going to save him. That it was Apollo who'd ruined him, and Apollo who must save him. Quote, then Apollo shrieked out from his golden tripod and sent me here to get the statue that fell from the sky. That's why he's here, so far from Greece, stumbling upon Iphigenia's own doorstep, to take the cult statue of Artemis, said to have fallen from the sky. He's to bring it back to Athens and install it there, that it will mean his salvation. So Orestes says to his sister, quote, help me accomplish the salvation set out for us. He tells her that if they manage it, if they can steal the cult statue and bring it to Athens, his fury-inflicted madness will finally be over. Quote, all is lost for me, all is lost for the race of Pelops, unless we get our hands on that heaven-dropped statue. The chorus is who first replies to Orestes after his story, after he's begged Iphigenia to help him steal this cult statue of Artemis, the only thing that can free him from the Furies. They say just, quote, some dread wrath of a god has boiled up against the seed of Tantalus and drives it on through woes. Iphigenia wants to help her brother. She's long hoped to be able to return to Argos to meet him, to be home after so long and after such traumatic last moments with her family. She wants what he wants, she tells Orestes. She wants to return him to their family home in whatever way possible. She even says that her anger for Agamemnon, her killer, is gone now, and that it is only adding to her desire to help Orestes achieve his freedom from the Furies. But that doesn't make it an easy task, not where they are. How can we possibly steal not only from the goddess, but the king too, they ask. Quote, how shall I escape death? What story can I come up with? Or, she goes on, if their plans work and they get the statue on board the ship, then freedom will certainly be possible. But she doesn't see this plan as necessarily including her. She tells Orestes that it would be fine to die if it meant that she saves him. Quote, because, you know, when a man is lost from home, they long for him, but a woman doesn't signify. And if that isn't some Euripidean commentary, I don't know what is. If I didn't know better, I might think it purely ancient misogyny, but I didn't believe that for a second. Not when the rest of Euripides' catalog exists. No, he is telling us something here. And that something is, Iphigenia might not believe it, but spoilers, she is going to be the one to save them. Orestes is pretty useless. And Orestes immediately tells Iphigenia, no, absolutely not. He will not be her murderer in addition to the murderer of their mother. Quote, I'm your partner. I want to share life and death with you equally. He tells her that he will bring her home with him or die trying. He adds, too, that he wonders if this attempt to steal the cult statue is really something that Artemis would even have a problem with. Like, if it was, then why would her brother, Apollo, ask Orestes to do it? It doesn't seem likely that Apollo would contrive all of this, including Orestes' reunion with his sister, over something that Apollo's sister would be against. With that in mind, they begin to plan the best means of them both avoiding death. What if we killed the king? Orestes suggests, because he's Orestes. Absolutely not, Iphigenia replies. We cannot kill our host. I mean, I don't know, Orestes basically says. If it'll save us both, I think it's worth the risk. No, it isn't, she tells him. And she's right. Like, did he learn nothing? Okay, what if you hide me inside the temple? He suggests as a hilariously mild counter to the murdering of the king. Do you mean that we'd escape once it gets dark? She clarifies. Yes, Orestes replies. Quote, night belongs to thieves, daylight to truth. But when Iphigenia points out that, unfortunately, there are guards in the temple all the time, so it won't be so easy as just, like, waiting for it to get dark. Orestes replies by exclaiming that, ugh, okay, he gives up. It's all over. There's no way out. It's very on brand, if you ask me. Like, Orestes is never the idea man. Pretty sure almost the exact same thing happened in Euripides' Orestes. Iphigenia, though, thankfully, has got a plan. Quote, I'll turn your troubles to use in a cunning way. And of course, Orestes replies just to say that women are good at scheming. Because of course he does. But Iphigenia's next line after the women scheming is, quote, I'll declare you came from Argos, a murderer of your mother. And while it's technically, you know, her announcing her plan, it feels a bit more like a response to his jab about the scheming, like pot, kettle. But regardless, it is the plan. She tells him that she can tell the Taurians that because of his crimes, he can't be sacrificed to the goddess as he is. He's impure. It would be sacrilege. What about the statue? He asks. Well, she explains, I'll say that you need to be purified in seawater for your crimes and that the statue does too, because you touched it. And where do we go from there? He asks. Which, like, Orestes, come on. She's clearly got it. But Iphigenia is kind. She tells him, well, we'll go to your ship. So is it you or someone else carrying the statue? He asks, and honestly, it feels like Orestes is more of a hindrance to her plan than anything else. But who am I to judge? He's not my brother. Yes, she says simply, I will be the one holding it. So what about Pylades? He'll be there with us, she says, going through the same purification for his pollution. And are we doing this without telling the king? No, Iphigenia clarifies. Quote, I'll win him with words. No way to prevent him noticing. So you must take care. Take very great care of everything else. Well, this feels like a bit of a red flag because Orestes. But we go on. Iphigenia adds that these women, the chorus of Greeks that are with them, they have to come along. They have to be in on the plan. Make it happen, then. Orestes says, quote, find convincing arguments. A woman has the power to stir pity.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Now that they've finally got a plan of escape, it is up to Iphigenia to make it work, with the chorus of women. She doesn't want to leave them behind, but they all have to be in on the plan in order for it to work. She pleads with them, her friends, her only friends, that her fate is in their hands, that it's up to them whether she gets to return with her beloved brother to see her long-lost sister, or whether she's left to die here among the Taurians. Quote, "We are women, as a species devoted to one another, staunch in defending our common interests." If only that were always true. She goes on. She tells them that they have to stay quiet about the plan and support it in whatever ways they can. That they must remain loyal to her in order for it to work. And of course, if they help her with the plan, it will benefit them as much as it does her. They will be able to return to their own homes in Greece after so many years away. "So what do you say?" she finishes. Quote, "If you reject me, I perish, and my poor brother too." So, like, no pressure, ladies. I mean, they're with her, though. It's an easy decision. They will stay silent. They will do their part to make this plan work. So once Iphigenia has given her thanks to the chorus, she turns back to Orestes and Pylades to set the plan in motion. "It's their job to enter the temple," she says. And I think that's it. "The king is almost here. He's going to investigate whether you've been sacrificed already." And once she said that, she makes a call to the goddess. Quote, "Oh, goddess who saved me in the folds of Aulis from a terrible murdering father's hand, save me now too, along with these men." She goes on, it seems, to tell even Artemis to leave the lands of the Taurians, that it isn't right for her to be here when she could be in Athens, quote, "blessed and happy." And with that, the three of them go inside the temple, and the chorus remains, to sing of the bird Halcyon, who flies along the rocky shoreline mourning her husband. They sing of feeling that way themselves, like birds without wings, longing for their homeland and everything in the Greek world that they've so long been away from. They sing of rivers of tears, of the towers of their homelands being toppled, of being driven from their homes, trafficked and brought so far away. They sing of Iphigenia, daughter of Agamemnon, how together they all serve Artemis on an altar where only humans are killed. Quote, "But happiness keeps shifting, to fall into evils after good fortune makes a heavy life for a mortal." They sing of Iphigenia being brought home on an Argive ship, how she will go to Athens and be home on Greek soil. What they don't believe, though, is that they will go with her. Iphigenia might have told the chorus of women that if she escapes, so would they, but they don't seem to believe her. They sing of wishing they could return home, but that they will be left behind. They wish they could travel the path of the sun, drop themselves down into their old bedrooms, back into their old lives. And then the king of the Taurians, Thoas, arrives. He's looking for Iphigenia. Just after he asks about her, Iphigenia returns to the stage, and she's holding this cult statue of Artemis. She begins to act out her plan. She tells him that the men sent for her to sacrifice were impure, that she knows this because the statue turned her back on them. And no, she says when he asks, it wasn't an earthquake that did it, but the goddess herself. They're polluted, she says. Quote, they were carrying bloodstains from home when they came here. She tells him that they killed their mother, that they've been chased through all of Greece, and that's why she has the statue. That she has to cleanse it out in the open, far from the altar, covered in blood. Iphigenia is cunning here. She plays off of everything that Thoas asks her. She says she interrogated the men when the statue turned its back. That's how she learned about their crimes. She says that they even baited her, that they told her that her only brother was alive so that she might spare them, even adding that her father was alive, another reason to keep these strangers alive. Thoas isn't remotely worried that she isn't telling him the truth. He eats it all up. Quote, naturally, you remain loyal to the goddess, he states, and it isn't even a question. And she ensures he remains convinced. Quote, oh yes, I hate Greece utterly. Greece ruined me. And so when he asks her what they should do with the strangers, he is more than ready to listen to whatever she has to say. It's law, she says. They must be purified with cleansing rituals. In the river or the sea? He asks. And she says, quote, the sea washes away all human evil. Of course, he agrees. Then they'll be perfectly pure for the goddess. Exactly, and I'll be better off too, she says. Thoas is eating out of the palm of Iphigenia's hand. He says, doesn't the sea wash right up next to the temple here? Yes, she says, but we need a more secluded spot. We have other things that need to be done for the ritual. Oh, sure, he says easily. Quote, take them wherever you want. I've no desire to see forbidden things. Iphigenia nods. I've got to cleanse the statue, too, she says. Oh, sure, yeah, of course, he agrees again, completely. No questions asked. Quote, your piety and forethought are impeccable. She knows she has him, so she goes on. I want to tie the prisoners up, she says. They're Greek, so they can't be trusted. Of course, he says. And she wants their heads covered, and for him to send some servants with her, and for him to send someone else around the town to tell everyone to stay indoors. Oh, sure, Thoas says. So they stay away from the blood? Yes, exactly. They can't be polluted, too. He tells her, quote, how well you care for our city. And those I need to protect, she adds, and he assumes she means him. Oh, she's so admirable. Iphigenia nods. I assume she's trying not to look giddy here. Like, this is going really, really well. Now you, she tells him, you stay inside the temple and cleanse it with sulfur. Oh, sure, yeah, he says. So that it's pure for you. Yes, exactly. And when the men are brought out, you need to cover your eyes. Oh, yeah, definitely, he says. I don't want to see a guilty man. Yeah, right, exactly. That's what I mean. She agrees because, you know, this man is gullible. And if I take a while, she continues, don't worry. Like, it's all fine. There's nothing to be concerned about. You definitely don't need to come looking for me. Oh, totally, he says. Quote, take your time. Do the work of the goddess properly. Oh, here they are now, Iphigenia says, when Orestes and Pylades are brought from the temple. And then Iphigenia seems to address everyone, like the town itself. She speaks of what she'll do, purifying the crimes and washing away blood with blood. She calls for the people of the town to keep away from her, though, from the pollution. Quote, anyone about to enter a marriage, anyone heavy with child, keep back. Step away, lest this uncleanness fall upon you. She's trying to ensure that innocent people aren't caught up in what she's about to do. She wants to escape her captors. She wants to go home. It might be violent. But what she doesn't want to do is hurt innocent people. it's the right thing to do to keep innocence, to keep children safe from violence. It's the human thing to do. So even Iphigenia, an ancient mythological Greek who was raised to believe that anyone who is not Greek was a barbarian, knows that all children are human. And all children and all innocent people deserve the same human rights as everyone else. Children don't deserve to be punished for the actions of others. Definitely not thousands of them. With that, Iphigenia makes a prayer to Artemis that her sanctuary be purified and, quote, "As for the rest, I do not say it, but I make a sign to the gods who know more and to you, goddess." Again, it's only the chorus left on the stage while whatever comes next happens offstage. So they sing of the Titan goddess Leto, mother of Apollo and of Artemis. They sing of her trials, her labor. They sing of Apollo, how he killed that snake on Mount Parnassus, how he installed the Oracle of Delphi. They sing of how it was once stolen from him by Mother Earth, that oracle, but he ran to his daddy and he complained until Zeus gave it back. And no, they don't describe it like that, but I can't take Apollo seriously. The chorus sings of this return from Zeus to Apollo of the oracle, and that in doing so, quote, "he bestowed trust in the singing of the god's word." And it's then that a messenger arrives on stage. He's looking for the king, and he has news. So when the chorus asks him what news he has and why he needs the king, he spills it. The two men, the strangers who were set to die, they've escaped with the help of Iphigenia. "Oh, wow. Wow," the chorus tells him. "That's crazy." "But sorry, guy. The king isn't here. He ran off." "Where did he go?" the messenger asks, like, frantic. "You know, no idea," they tell him. "Like, he ran off somewhere. Like, you better go find him, though." They are playing their role well, just as Iphigenia hoped. The messenger tells them, quote, "See how treacherous is the female species? You too have some share in these goings-on, don't you?" "Shh," they tell him, "don't be crazy. What would we care about these foreigners escaping? And also, like, shouldn't you be running off now, like, in that direction away from the temple?" "Oh, no, I won't," he says, "not until someone else tells me if the king is inside this temple or not." And so he starts calling inside the temple, banging on the door and shouting to whoever might be in there. And so, busted, the king exits the temple asking him what all the trouble is about. And I like to think the chorus is kind of looking around all innocent, like maybe they're whistling. Doo-doo-doo. The messenger immediately tells the king that the women lied to him, singing he was gone, but here he is! But then he realizes, like, he has more important things to tell the king, so he does. He tells the king what's happened, or rather, like, what is in the midst of happening. He tells him how Iphigenia has run off with the strangers, the foreigners, and the statue that fell from the sky. He tells the king that the purification was a trick played by Iphigenia, that she was intending to save Orestes the whole time. "Orestes?" the king says, surprised. "You mean to tell me that the stranger was the prince of Mycenae, Iphigenia's own brother?" "Focus, king," the messenger basically says. Like, right now we've got more urgent issues than the family reunion. Like, they are escaping. "Right, right, of course," the king says, making a very confident threat that they won't escape him before the messenger goes on to, well, to tell us all exactly what happened. He talks about how he and the other guards brought the strangers and Iphigenia to the shore where, unbeknownst to them, Orestes' ship was anchored. There, Iphigenia had them stand back, saying she needed to kindle a forbidden flame. Then she took the ropes that held the men from us guards, he says, and stood behind them. Yes, he says, it was suspicious, but we went along with it. And then she started singing and chanting, like behaving as though she was a priest, purifying someone of pollution. Then, the messenger says, after a while of this, we worried that once the men were set free, like they might kill Iphigenia and try to escape themselves. So we watched carefully. And in truth, there wasn't anything to be done in that moment. Wasn't our fault. But then we saw the ship, he says, like the Greek ship was just off the shore, all ready to go. And, like, suddenly the ship was manned with 50 sailors, and standing on the stern were the two strangers, free of their bindings, watching as the sailors prepared the ship to set sail. He says that he and the guards, though, were still holding tightly to Iphigenia, and that they tried to hold onto the ship's ropes and like, even yanked at the oars, anything to stop it. And they called to the men, asking who they were and why they wanted to abduct this woman. And that's when one of the two men announced that he was Orestes, son of Agamemnon, brother to Iphigenia. The messenger goes on to describe basically getting beat up by Orestes and Pylades, how no one had blades, but those guys, they had fists and feet for kicking. So the guards ran just up a cliff where they could, like, then throw rocks at the ship, still trying to stop them. But there were archers on the ship, and before long, Orestes and Pylades had gotten Iphigenia on board, and, the ship was moving, sailing away from the shore, and the guards could do nothing. They described one of the men as shouting, quote, "We have the prize for which we sailed through the hostile passage of the clashing rocks." And so they sailed off. But when the ship was finally free of the harbor, the messenger goes on to say, there was a horrible wave and terrible wind, and it was pushing the ship back. Though they kept trying to move forward, but it wasn't working. And it was then that Iphigenia got up and began to pray to Artemis, calling to the daughter of Leto to keep her priestess safe, to send her back to Greece and forgive her for stealing the statue, to understand why she did it. Because if any goddess understands the love of a sister to her brother, it's Artemis. The ship kept sailing, but it also kept being thrown back towards the rocks. And that's when the messenger ran off, he says, in search of the king. Like, that's all he saw. He came here to tell him what was happening. He believes that Poseidon is stopping the ship. Like, that there's a terrible wave or, like, a storm. Poseidon's on it. Like, maybe he'll dash it on the rocks and then the brother and sister can be, like, returned there to the Taurians. Thoas is thrilled by this turn. He is ready to watch the ship be destroyed, if that's what Poseidon's doing, or sent back to his lands by the waves. He calls on everyone to head to the shores, to watch as it is brought back, to watch as the children of Agamemnon are thrown back to the shore or killed in the sea. And he turns to the chorus, telling them that they will be blamed for their role in this, and for just being Greek, because it's the villains who blame and punish people just for where they were born. But this is when Athena arrives on the scene. Yeah, you heard me. Athena arrives not on the stage, but on the deus ex machina, the machine, the crane that holds the gods above the stage so that they can appear at their most godlike. And she speaks to Thoas, telling him quite simply that he's got to let them go. It's all over, buddy. It was Apollo who decreed their actions, and it was he who sent Orestes to steal the statue, he who ordained their escape. She tells him that he won't get them back, like even if he tries, that Poseidon is actually doing her a favor, and he's calming the seas so that they can have a smooth sailing home. And then she speaks directly to Orestes, though she notes that while, he isn't there, he can hear her all the same. She tells Orestes to listen to her words, to take the statue and Iphigenia and go. When they reach Athens, there's a spot on the edges of Attica, a place called Halae. There, he's to build a temple to Artemis that will house the statue. He's to call it Tauric, after the Taurian lands. He's to establish a custom there. Quote, "When they celebrate her festival, let them hold a sword at a man's throat and draw blood." Then she speaks to Iphigenia, explains that she needs to maintain her status as a priestess of Artemis, and she will do it in Brauron. She says that it's there that Iphigenia will live and die and be buried. And later, people will make offerings to her, quote, fine woven robes left behind by women who die in childbirth. She even adds to Thoas that he's to send the chorus of Greek women from his lands, quote, as a reward for their righteousness. She announces that the trial Orestes went through on the Hill of Ares will become standard. And finally, quote, go then, child of Agamemnon, bring your sister out of this land, and you, Thoas, calm your rage. Thoas doesn't try to fight Athena. He knows when to listen to a goddess. He agrees with all she's said and wishes them all the best. Thoas sings a final thank you to Athena, a final prayer for the goddess, and with another prayer to Nike, victory for his own life. The play ends. Oh, nerds, nerds, nerds. Thank you so much for listening. I want to talk more about the ramifications of this ending and everything that Athena decreed, because much, if not all of it, is based on, like, real Attic customs and, like, court systems. But I've had a horrible few days, and I am far too emotionally exhausted to write or speak another thing into this microphone. So we're going to leave those for another day. I will just say, in case I forget to say it, for all he includes a couple of silly misogynist jokes. Like, I love that Euripides writes misogynist statements into his play and then proceeds to have the women be the most competent characters in the whole thing and be the only reason that the heroes survive and that it is not a tragedy at all. He's perfect. Anyway, I've got a guest lined up to talk all things real worship of Artemis for Women's History Month. So this will not be the last that you hear of the goddess's real-life customs, particularly Brauron. Whew! But for now, let's just finish off with a lovely 5-star review that came at a particularly appropriate time for me. This one comes from a user called Flawless Joe in the States. So good! Liv does an amazing job making the classics relatable. I also love the recent dive into ancient geography. It's so crazy cool hearing about ancient places and people who still exist under the same names. Thank you, Flawless Joe, and let's keep it that way. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is written and produced by me, Liv Albert. Michaela Smith is the Hermes to my Olympians. She is my assistant producer. Laura Smith is now the production assistant and audio engineer. Select music used in this episode was by Luke Chaos. The podcast is part of the iHeart Podcast Network. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Help me continue bringing you the world of Greek mythology and the ancient Mediterranean by becoming a patron, where you will get bonus episodes and more. Visit patreon.com/mythsbaby or click the link in this episode's description. Thank you all so much. You are lovely. I am Liv, and I just really love Euripides. Like, I think he's brilliant. I want to give him a hug.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.